Full Story is supported by CommBank. CommBank is dedicated to using the latest tech to create real change. From utilizing agentic AI to outsmart cybercrime, to solving complex problems at scale, their teams support more than 17 million Australians every day. And you could be part of it. CommBank is looking for senior technologists to help influence strategy, security, and innovation across one of Australia's leading tech environments. If you're a curious mind who thrives on collaboration and is eager to engineer real impact, search CommBank Tech Careers.
Dan, welcome back to Full Story.
Hey, Noah. Thanks for having me on.
You've been working on a series for The Guardian looking at the Albanese government's aims as it enters its fifth year in power and delving into the question of what does it stand for. As you hit the phones and spoke to ministers, backbenchers and other party insiders, did you feel as though you got an answer to that question?
I certainly got different answers. I think there's, if we look at this from kind of two perspectives, the overarching or the overall view of, I'd say, the overwhelming majority of the government, in particular the people in the senior leadership who are close to Albanese, when you put to them what is the point of this government, what is the purpose, what is the mission, the response is it is a stable, united, centre-left government that is pursuing progressive change with the intention of improving the lives of working people over a long period of time. And the unifying purpose across the Labor caucus is this belief that in order to change the country in the long term, to be able to entrench reforms in the economic fabric of society, in the social fabric of society, that Labor governments need to govern for a long time. You need to be able to govern for long enough for the things that they believe in to become so entrenched that they become difficult for the other side of politics to unwind. And I guess one of the kind of overarching influences for the government in pursuing that strategy is the experience that a lot of them had in the Rudd and Gillard years, which we know there was really quite significant reform, but it was quite chaotic. There was obviously leadership changes and it ended quite abruptly. And that is a real kind of point of resentment and regret for people in the Albanese government, because the brevity of that term allowed Tony Abbott, after he came in, to be able to unwind things such as the carbon price. And that's what they are absolutely hell-bent on avoiding this time. They want to govern for long enough to make it impossible for the Liberals to unwind. So that is the sort of overwhelming majority view. But that is also contrasted by this sense of what I would characterize as restlessness, this sense that, yes, we want to govern for a long time. Yes, we want to kind of change the country. But the approach that the government has taken thus far has been to do things methodically, incrementally. Change has been slow. Change has not been, we can get to individual policies in a second. It hasn't been, the government hasn't done the kind of the full scale change in lots of different areas. And that's created a sense of restlessness among the caucus, who are questioning, do we need to go faster? Do we need to go further?
Okay. And I want to get to that question of restlessness in a moment, but you've reported and others have suggested before that many in Labor saw their success at the last election as an endorsement of Anthony Albanese's cautious, steady-as-she-goes approach to governing, rather than support for big, transformative change. How do people in Labor feel about being seen as a centrist or cautious government, rather than a progressive or ambitious one?
So I think it's a, and this sort of goes to perhaps part of the conversation we'll get to around the left of the Labor Party, which of course Albanese is from, and that is really the wing of the party that has traditionally pushed them to go further and has been the ones that have traditionally spoken out on war and have pushed progressive policies. The left faction is now in charge, and almost what we've seen is Albanese's own transformation from kind of young left-wing activist to centrist prime minister has become reflective of the left, but also the government in general. So I think a lot of the people in the government from the prime minister down have become comfortable with this view that in order to be able to pursue progressive change, you need to do it almost from, and this will sound like a contradiction in terms, do it from the centre, be able to sell policies in a way that appeal to the centre, where you can take the whole country along with you. And that's really kind of the governing philosophy that Albanese has adopted. And I think one of the certainly strong views within the caucus is there is real pushback to this suggestion that they aren't progressive. It's certainly a criticism that comes from people on the left and even some of their own supporters that they're not bold and ambitious. They really try and counter that view. They point to things like what we've seen with wage increases in childcare, in aged care, things around the investments in social housing, in Medicare, in paid parental leave. The energy transition is probably not something that we typically think of as a big, bold, progressive reform, but in their view, it's as significant as anything that any government has undertaken in the last century and perhaps the century to come as well. So I think there is a view that the government is progressive, but perhaps our idea of what defines progressive governments has changed, and the government is more comfortable with that new definition and pursuing change in that environment.
Mm. As many have observed, the centre is not static in politics.
No. Yeah. You know, one of the most telling observations that I received was from a Labor strategist that was talking about the kind of political environment that Labor is operating in at the moment. So once upon a time, or in the years that John Howard was in charge, you could kind of define the political landscape as the Liberal Party and the National Party had rusted on voters, sort of the 40% of rusted on voters, Labor had their rusted on voters, and then you kind of fought over the 20% of the swinging voters. That landscape has changed. There is far fewer rusted on voters, and that is the product of a whole series of things, the kind of fragmentation of the media, all of those things that we've talked about. So what that means is there is a view that Labor can no longer afford to kind of govern for its progressive base because it's not as stable as it once was, that the political environment is so fragmenting that they have to think about it much broader, because you can't guarantee you're going to be able to lock down a big enough proportion of the electorate to be able to win. So that is a really significant factor in the way that they approach all of their policies, but in particular what we would characterise as progressive policies.
Mm. I do want to talk about that fragmentation and the social changes and how that's affecting Labor policy, but Dan, it's been reported before and throughout the last 4 years that there is very little, if any, debate inside the government in caucus. Last year, there was an ABC article that referred to the lack of internal debate about policy as Pyongyang-level discipline. What's created that atmosphere? Why aren't backbenchers challenging ideas as they once did?
So I think there's a whole series of factors, and we'll kind of work through them one by one. To make the first point is there is a sense of responsibility from MPs that they want to keep that unity because they've seen what disunity has done to them in the past. I think without doubt the power and influence that Albanese has, it's made MPs, whether they're on the backbench, in cabinet, in the sort of outer ministry, very careful and in some cases fearful of speaking out because they know how powerful he is and how ostracised MPs can get frozen out if they don't toe the line and if they do speak out.
So fear, retribution or rebuke is part of it?
Absolutely. And I don't think that point is challenged. I mean, certainly I'm sure Albanese and his allies would challenge that. And when you put to them the question of why is the caucus so quiet? So when you put that notion or that stereotype to people that are close to Albanese, their response is that everybody sees a stake in the success of the government and they don't see value in speaking out. But also they point out the work that he does to build relationships across the caucus. There's lots of accounts of Albanese. He always returns phone calls. He has backbenchers over for dinner. Ministers have open doors policies. There is a sense that there are internal avenues for MPs to be able to communicate, but we just don't see that publicly. We also don't see it in caucus meetings and even within the factional meetings. So to kind of unpack that for our listeners, so there's a left faction of the Labor Party and the right faction of the Labor Party. Every sitting week, they have meetings on Monday night. Traditionally, these have been like really fiery meetings where they can get together and really thrash these things out. And then the next morning, the caucus comes together. And historically, I mean, there have been blazing rows in both sets of those meetings. We just don't see them anymore.
But there are cracks beginning to show, aren't there? I'm thinking of Ed Husic when he spoke out about Isaac Herzog's visit and also the push for a new tax on gas, Mike Freelander and gambling. Could we see more of that throughout this second term?
We could, potentially. I think the fact that if you were to continue listing the number of MPs that have spoken out, the list wouldn't be particularly long, and we're 4 years into this government. So those are and have been isolated cases. So you mentioned Ed Husic, and obviously Husic, the context there is a former minister who was relegated to the backbench where he has the freedom but the seniority and I guess the strength of feeling to speak out. Is there going to be more kind of breaking of ranks as things goes on? I think there would have to be a significant change in the internal view of Labor's electoral position. The thing that more often than not motivates people to speak out is obviously conviction, but also self-interest, the sense that the government isn't going in the right direction. So I think if we see Labor's primary vote diminish as the term goes on, for whatever reason, I think it's a possibility. But I think there is now quite an ingrained culture within the caucus that has been apparent for the 4 years that they've been in charge so far. And yes, there are cracks, but I don't get the sense that those cracks are about to split wide open and we're about to see some of the outbreaks of disunity that have characterised Labor governments in the past.
What does that do to policy and policy decision making?
It's a great question, and it goes to, I mean, historically one of the purposes of caucus was to be able to reflect the views of their communities and to be able to kind of funnel that feedback up to the executive, and also to act almost as a kind of, because they're so They're on the ground, they're in touch with their communities, act as a bit of a warning device that, look, we're hearing stuff on the ground, you guys need to act. So I think the lack of internal debate, and that I should mention, that includes, there is concern about a lack of internal debate, even in cabinet, that you just don't have that contest of ideas that you would like to think ultimately generates the best outcomes. I think it's a pretty well established view that if there aren't debates, whether they're happening internally or externally, you just have a prevailing view, people fall in behind Albanese and his senior ministers, and you run the risk of veering off track. At this stage, and again, this goes back to the scale of victory in 2025, even Albanese's critics look at what happened last year and say, look, his political judgment was right. You know, Labor was in a pretty precarious position at the back end of 2024, even at the start of 2025, but Albanese never wavered in terms of thinking that Labor was going to win. And so there is a sense that his judgment is perhaps better than anybody else. His political radar, he's been around for a very long time. So I think that plays into the view that MPs have.
Mm. I want to go back to something you referred to earlier. In your second piece, you look at the evolution of some of the people at the helm of the Labor Party, including Anthony Albanese, from what you describe as firebrands to centrists. And you point out that the party's activist wing has never held as much power as it does now. And yet Anthony Albanese has backed AUKUS and he's not criticised, you know, Donald Trump and his acts of war. Can you unpack that evolution for us a bit more?
Well, I think it goes to Albanese's own personal evolution being indicative of the transformation of the left overall. So here is this part of the party that has traditionally, as the left-wing Labor Senator Doug Cameron said in a speech last year, that was historically the party's conscience. But what we've seen in recent times, and this was a view that was expressed by very senior people in the left, is that they have, through being able to end internal, there was a degree of internal warfare within the left. They've reconciled that and they've been able to use that to steadily accumulate power and control internally. And as they have increased their internal power, they have kind of assumed the role less of the insurgents and more of the managers.
Mm.
I mean, one of the policies that I think goes to the heart of this evolution is this question around the recognition of Palestine. There was so much criticism externally but also internally from parts of the membership that they were doing things too slowly, that it needed to happen far earlier, they needed to be far stronger. But people on the left view the way that they handled that decision. So they ultimately announced that they would recognise a Palestinian state in August of 2025, which is almost 2 years after the war started, as an example of, it was put to me as a sensible progressive approach, that they had done things in their own time, in their own way, and in a manner that when the decision was announced, ultimately, there was broad community support for it. So it's a really interesting way listening to these MPs reconcile with how that approach marries up to the philosophical beliefs that they have had as members of the left of the Labor Party. But it's a view that is entrenched in the senior parts of the party, and I don't suspect it'll change anytime soon.
We'll be right back.